Sergeant Shriver, has the Peace Corps lost its luster?
What security measures are used in screening applicants?
Mr. Shriver, how are your new frontiersmen doing?
Capitol Cloakroom. From the nation's capital, CBS Radio brings you the 677th presentation of Capitol Cloakroom, a spontaneous and unrehearsed interview with an outstanding public figure. This week's guest is R. Sergeant Shriver, Director of the Peace Corps. The program was recorded in his office. Mr. Shriver meets with CBS News correspondents Neil Strauser, Nancy Hunchman, and Robert Pierpoint. First, we hear from Mr. Strauser.
R. Sergeant Shriver, welcome to Capitol Cloakroom. You were the assistant general manager of Chicago's huge merchandise mart until the 1960 presidential campaign came along. A member of the Kennedy family by marriage, you were one of the earliest supporters of John Kennedy. After his election, you participated in the so-called Operation Manhunt, the operation to recruit new, fresh faces to man the new frontier. And you have taken command of one of the most interest-catching outposts of the new frontier, serving without pay as the director of the Peace Corps. The Peace Corps was an idea which caught the imagination as a bold, new, almost missionary way to personally help the underdeveloped nations of the world. But now you are having to defend your outpost against criticism from Congress and elsewhere, which leads to our first question. Has this Peace Corps idea lost its luster?
No, I don't think so, Mr. Strauser. In the first place, over in the Congress, we've got a tremendous vote of endorsement there. The House of Representatives, 3-1, approved the Peace Corps. And in some of the countries where the Peace Corps has recently arrived, we're already beginning to get requests for additional Peace Corps volunteers from those very countries which have already signed up with us. Here at home, just last week, we had a test, and 2,000 additional people took the Peace Corps test. There will be other tests in November the 28th to be specific, and I anticipate that the numbers will continue to apply in the thousands for the Peace Corps.
Is that as high a number as you expected when the program was initially talked about by President Kennedy?
So far as I'm concerned, yes. In the president's initial speech on the Peace Corps, you'll remember that he said he hoped that we would have several hundred in training or overseas by the end of 1961. As a matter of fact, we'll have almost 1,000.
By the end of this year?
Yes.
And how many by the end of 1962?
We'll probably have somewhere around 2,000 to 2,300. If we had gotten all of the money from Congress that we asked for, we could have had more people overseas. But with the amount that they have given us, we think we'll have 2,000 to 2,300.
This is the question. In Congress, when the authorization came up, the endorsement was overwhelming. But when it came down to the money, Congress was a great deal more doubtful. And for a while, you were getting only about half what you asked and finally got about three quarters.
Well, may I put a footnote onto that? The only time that Congress, either the Senate or the House, voted, it voted for the full $40 million. The Senate approved the $40 million, 59 to 32. And the House authorized the $40 million by a 3-1 majority. So that there never was a vote in the House or the Senate cutting the Peace Corps. The only time that came up was in a committee, and a small committee.
Well, speaking of that $40 million, your agency says that it costs approximately $9,000 to support a Peace Corps man each year, and you expect about $2,000 by the end of next year. Isn't that an awfully large budget for what's been billed as a volunteer program? Isn't there a lot of overhead for that?
No, actually, it turns out to be rather small. $9,000 per volunteer probably is the least costly, the most inexpensive form of foreign assistance that this government has ever embarked upon. It compares quite favorably with the costs even of sending a missionary who donates his life, you might say, to this type of work. When you add up all the costs of sending an infantryman, for example, a private in the army overseas, I think you'll find out that it's well in excess of $9,000 per annum, so it's really quite cheap.
I'm not questioning the $9,000. I'm questioning the amount of money left over after you take $9,000 times 2,000 volunteers. Isn't that a great deal of overhead for a volunteer agency?
I can see what you're thinking now. I'm sorry, but actually, it involves a lot more than that. For example, in this calendar year or this fiscal year, we make commitments for a large number of people for 2 years. So that you'd have to multiply some of those $2,000 by $18,000 rather than $9,000. We also make commitments in fiscal 62 for the training of people, which will take place in fiscal 63. So it isn't just the difference between $18 million and $30 million. I gather that's what you were thinking. It's not that. We make many commitments over a two-year period in order to get universities and private voluntary agencies working with us.
Mr. Shriver, some of the experts who've been writing about the Peace Corps estimates that it's going to take something like 200,000 young people abroad in a program like this to really have an impact. You're talking about 2,000. Now, actually, do you feel that that 2,000 people spread all over the world can have much of an effect, or isn't the administrative cost of this program making it almost useless?
No, I don't agree that we need 200,000 in Africa to make an impact. For example, the White Fathers, which is a famous missionary organization of the Catholic Church, has been in Africa for about 60 years. They've never had more than about 2,200 people, but they've had a tremendous impact in Africa. I think you'll find out that many other missionary groups have been in Africa with less than 2,000 and have made a great impact. Numbers isn't just, this is not a numbers game, this is a quality game. If you make your impact in important areas with good people, it will be felt.
What do you think the impact is going to be? Just what exactly do you aim at?
Well, first, in terms of education, I think it'll be great. One of the most pressing needs in Africa, since you brought that up, is for teachers. Nigeria, for example, needs 10,000 teachers, and this is a well-substantiated need. If we can supply even one-tenth, namely 1,000 of those people, it will be a great contribution. I know that if somebody had come to me when I was the president of the Chicago Board of Education and offered to provide me one-tenth of all the teachers I needed in Chicago, it would have made an impact on me and on everybody in Chicago. And similarly, this will have an impact in Nigeria.
How large a program do you aim at, let's say, by the end of the president's first term?
Well, we haven't made projections that far in advance because we'd like to build on the basis of practical experience and operating results.
You said before that you'd received many more requests for Peace Corpsmen than you had even expected. There are reports here in Washington that sometimes pressure has been put on these governments to request Peace Corpsmen. How do you answer such reports?
No pressure has been put on by us. If anybody knows of any pressure, I'd like to know who has been putting it on. It certainly hasn't been put on by the Peace Corps. So far as I know, it's not been put on by any of our embassy officials. And frankly, I can't think of a case where we've put on pressure to enlist the services of Peace Corps volunteers. Matter of fact, it's just been the reverse.
Could you tell us the countries that your Peace Corpsmen are now training to serve and the countries where they are serving and perhaps some of the countries where they will serve in the future?
That's quite a question. I'll do my best with it. Number one, we're in Africa. We're in Ghana, in Nigeria, in Tanganyika, and we have announced a program for Sierra Leone. So that's four countries in Africa. We also have announced a program for Pakistan and for India. We've announced one for Thailand and one for Malaya and for the Philippine Republic. Now, those are ones that we're... And then South America, excuse me. In South America, we have announced programs in Colombia and in Chile. Now, in addition to those countries, we will be announcing programs in at least three other African countries, three other South American countries, and perhaps another Far Eastern country within the next month.
In other words, there are other countries, about 10 more, perhaps, that have asked for Peace Corpsmen, but
you haven't. There are 15 or 20 that have asked for Peace Corps volunteers that we haven't been able to meet yet. As I said a minute ago to Ms. Hanchman, the demand is much larger than we have been able to fulfill.
Is it possible then you should have had a larger program, or is what is the delay then?
There's no delay. We feel that we're going ahead at a prudent pace. Sure, you could have tried to put 10,000 people overseas, and the complications that would have been involved in such a large program and the difficulties of administering it, I think, would have been too great.
Mr. Shriver, I'd like to ask what these Peace Corps volunteers, these young men and women, can do that our ICA program, our technical assistance people, cannot do and perhaps even do better because of their maturity.
Well, there are a lot of things. I'm not saying that they couldn't do them better. Perhaps they could do them better. But the ICA and the technical programs of assistance have never attempted, for example, to place 1,000 teachers in the schools, in the classrooms of a particular country. Now, we've had such requests from countries. From a number of countries, and we perhaps will be able to do that. The technical assistance heretofore has been primarily at the very high level, professors, let's say, of education or professors of agriculture. And in nearly every case, these professors who are overseas have come to us and said that they would be greatly helped themselves in making their own instruction more effective if they had younger people qualified to help them carry out what they're teaching. So we're not in any sense duplicating. We are, in some cases, supplementing, and I hope we're doing it intelligently.
Mr. Shriver, you outlined a moment ago some of the projects that were going to take place in Africa. and I would like to ask you a question about what plans you've made for the health of our Peace Corps men in Africa. It's well known that the Africans themselves are never very healthy, and non-Africans who go and live in the tropics are less healthy. This could become quite a burden for our embassies and for the whole Peace Corps program itself. What plans have you made to...
Well, the United States Public Health Service has been working with us every day since the Peace Corps started. And we are following their advice, both in the placement of the people overseas and in the health services supplied to them. For example, before we go into a country, a health survey is made, exactly where the Peace Corps people will be working, what they will be doing, the health hazards, if any, to which they will be exposed. All of our personnel get complete physical examinations, of course, before they go. They get complete immunization programs. They get a great degree of physical training, much more so, let me add, than other people who go over and do come down with these diseases. Finally, when they arrive in a country, we assign a Peace Corps doctor to every country. And that doctor has a job not only of taking care of the health of the Peace Corps volunteers, but he also, or she, carries out medical work for the benefit of the host country. So, for example, take Tanganyika. We have a doctor there, Dr. King, who has an appointment to the main hospital in the capital of Tanganyika called Dar es Salaam. He takes care of our Peace Corps volunteers and their health problems, but he also works in that hospital for the benefit of native Tanganyikans, and that pattern is followed throughout the world. So I think we're going to be making a medical contribution to these countries, as well as taking care of the health of our Peace Corps volunteers.
What about some of the Peace Corps volunteers who may contract rather permanent physical disabilities? Will they go on a pension, something like an Army man might?
Our legislation provides that the service-incurred disabilities, as the title goes, will be taken care of by the United States government.
Did you think when you first took on this job that you'd be running into such things as the problem of service-incurred disabilities and so forth? That it seemed quite as complicated when the idea was first proposed?
Well, I hate to say I told you so, and I don't really say that, but I do believe that we anticipated some of these problems, such as the health problem. Everybody who has any connection with this kind of work knows that the health problem is a very serious one.
Mm-hmm.
Meeting it is very difficult, and that's why we brought the United States Public Health Service in from the very beginning of the program. They've been with us, working with it all along.
I attended, I think, the very first hearing on the temporary authorization for your program, and you had an answer to it then, so I can say that you did anticipate it quite early.
Thank you.
Mr. Shriver, what security measures do you use in screening these applicants? Did you anticipate a lot of congressional concern about the possibility of communists trying to enter the Peace Corps?
Well, I think that concern was not only congressional. Many people around the country were concerned about that. And from the beginning, we required everybody working for the Peace Corps to have a full field investigation by the FBI before they could go on the payroll, so to speak. And this includes the volunteers. We made this as an administrative decision right here within the Peace Corps headquarters. When the Congress had a chance to study the program, they decided that this was too much. That may surprise some people, but they did decide this was too much. They decided that instead of asking for a full FBI check on all the volunteers, we would ask only for a full Civil Service Commission check on the volunteers. And only if something develops as a result of that Civil Service Commission check do we then turn it over to the FBI.
Is there a difference in the cost of such a check?
Well, I will reveal that we were very fortunate in getting a lot of cooperation from J. Edgar Hoover at the FBI, and these full field investigations by the FBI were done for the Peace Corps for nothing.
Did you find any communists trying to get in?
Not so far as I know, not yet.
It would be rather a compliment if you did, wouldn't it?
No, well, perhaps. I was rather pleased when I saw the communist newspaper in Chile attacking us a few days ago. I got a copy of an editorial that ran down there, and they said that this was another one of those CIA activities being masterminded by Sergeant Shriver, a sausage maker from Chicago.
Well, are your Peace Corps men expected to proselytize to democracy in any way at all? What is the briefing you give them on this?
Well, we give them a lot of instruction in American history and government and theory of government and political life, and we expect that when they're asked questions by the people in the foreign country, they'll be able to give intelligent, informed answers. We don't go out there and tell them, now here is course number 101 in American government, sell this if you can to the people in the Philippines. They're not out there as traveling salesmen. They're not out there to get up on a soapbox and give a speech, but they are supposed to be out there as well-informed, intelligent American, able to respond to questions from, and even from tough questions from people in foreign countries.
Mr. Shriver, it's early yet, but have you had any results, any practical results that you can tell us about?
Well, I think sometimes no news is good news. And in the case of Tanganyika, for example, our volunteers have been there for several weeks, and there have been no bombs exploded. There have been no ripe tomatoes thrown. There have been no picketing, Yankee, go home.
How about any heartwarming progress that you have?
Well, one thing that I enjoyed very much was when the group arrived at Ghana, they were able to sing some of the Ghanaian songs in the language of that country. This so impressed the Ghanaians that they put them on tape recordings and played them all over Ghana on the radio, so that people all the way up to the border of Upper Volta, which is 450 miles from the coast, knew about the arrival of the Peace Corps volunteers and were pleased that they had come. Also, a couple of our volunteers went to out on an evening, a social evening in Ghana, and they hadn't been there very long. They participated in a contest involving some Ghanaian national dances, and this Peace Corps couple won second prize in this dance, which shows that they were prepared in more ways than one for service overseas.
Do you expect to have any traveling checks of the way the Peace Corps men are doing?
Definitely.
Are you yourself going to go out to the field and
Definitely.
Take a look anytime soon?
Yes, very soon.
Where are you going?
I'm going to South America at the end of this month for 2 or 3 weeks. And subsequently, I will be going around the world to the places where the Peace Corps personnel are located. Now, it isn't only I who will be going. We have a small department here, 2 or 3 people, who will make it their business to go out and inspect what's being done in each one of these countries and to report to us so that we can try to improve if any mistakes are being made.
Mr. Shriver, we have the impression, it may not be correct, but the impression that most of these Peace Corpsmen are young people. Do you have with each unit an older advisor or a leader of some kind that sort of looks after all phases of their problems, not only the technical assistance, but perhaps their religious problems, moral problems, health problems? You mentioned the health, but...
Yes, and to answer your question, in each country we have what we call a Peace Corps representative. This person is on the staff of our ambassador, responsible to our ambassador. But he's not an embassy official. He doesn't live in the embassy, doesn't work in the embassy. His job is to be with the volunteers, watching what they're doing, not in the sense of supervising them, but to be aware of their problems and helpful to them. In some countries where we have a large number of people, let's say 200 or 300, there would be more than one such Peace Corps representative.
Do you feel, Mr. Shriver, that perhaps congressmen in particular and some others are too ready to criticize the Peace Corps program? There was the matter of one magazine did a spread on training and it showed a girl in a bathing suit. I recall there was a good deal of criticism of that. Apparently, Peace Corps people are not supposed to be really real people at all. Do you feel that there's too much of a readiness to criticize?
No, I don't mind criticism. I think that particular criticism is unjustified. But there are some people in every society who are against anything. You know, you call them the againers. Well, there'll be some of those that are against the Peace Corps. But I think we can grapple with them, and I think most criticism that I've heard so far is genuine, patriotic criticism, and we're very happy to get it.
Mr. Shriver, I'd like to go into another area somewhat related. During the time of the formation of this administration, you were considered to be sort of one of the men in charge of Operation Manhunt. That is, you were going out trying to find competent men who could fill top government posts. I think you've had, in effect, quite a strong influence on the administration so far because of your role in helping select the men who work with President Kennedy. I'd like to ask you, first of all, are you satisfied with your selections?
I certainly am, yes. I think they've worked out wonderfully well.
Well, I expected you would say that. Let's be a little specific. Now, for example, there has been, in recent weeks, some criticism of Secretary of State Rusk on the basis that, and as a newsman, I say this with some prejudiced interest, on the basis that our foreign policy vis-a-vis Berlin seems to be confused, that we don't know whether we are, for instance, in favor of a de facto recognition of East Germany or whether we aren't, that Secretary of State is keeping all of this under his hat, and that the public isn't informed, and in a democracy, this can be a problem. How do you answer that charge?
Well, I don't know about that specific charge, but I think that Secretary Rusk has done an outstanding job. I think we had to start all over again and look for a Secretary of State that we would probably end up right where we are in picking Secretary Rusk for the job. Whether or not the public is getting adequate information about Berlin is a technical question that I'm not qualified to answer.
Well, a substantial number of the Kennedy appointments have been Republicans. Do you think that this has tended to make Republican criticism less than what it might otherwise have been?
They seem to be pretty vocal despite the appointments.
Well, more or less recently.
Yes. No, I don't think that the people were not chosen with that thought in mind. They were chosen on account of ability. And we didn't expect, at least I certainly never expected, I'm sure the president never expected, that simply by picking a Republican or two or three Republicans, that would quiet Republican criticism.
And it hasn't.
And it hasn't, no, but I don't think he ever hoped that it would or expected that it would. Incidentally, we're trying to run our own talent scout operation here within the Peace Corps. We've been looking for persons, for example, to take these jobs as Peace Corps representatives overseas that we talked about a minute ago. And we've been extraordinarily lucky, I think, in finding a substantial number of dedicated Americans who come down here to work. Some fellows are leaving jobs, $37,000, $40,000 a year jobs, to come work for us for 10 or 12 or 14. And I think that this is indicative of the fact that this kind of talent scouting is helpful. It gives people a chance to serve their country, and I think a large number of Americans want to do that.
One can tell by reading the columns recently, however, there's a certain amount of disillusionment set in, on the part of some people at least, perhaps as a result of the talent scouting, the feeling that there perhaps should have been more radical changes within this new administration than took place. A feeling that the policies really didn't depart very much from the Eisenhower policies in spite of all the new faces. Do you feel that this was something that was built in, or are the changes still to come?
I think the changes have already occurred. I think some people are saying that nothing has been done because that serves their particular purpose. But I think there have been substantial changes. Just one example is the change in the defense appropriations and the allotment of monies into the Army, Navy, and Air Force. Now, I'm not a specialist in that either, but I do know that there's a substantial change over what the defense policy was before. Now, I think you could go around through the other parts of the government and find the same thing. For example, in the Commerce Department, there's a great deal more interest in labor management cooperation than there was before. The Secretary of Labor and the Secretary of Commerce are jointly working on a lot of programs in this area which are producing results.
At the same time, however, they've done away with the Business Advisory Committee
But nobody ever urged that it was a part of labor management cooperation.
Well, I think that the Eisenhower administration tried to make it that. It apparently didn't work out too well. But
how many labor people were on that council?
None, which is perhaps one of the problems. Well, now, I'd like to go and ask you a little deeper on this recruitment of people. Have you finished this job? Have you filled all of the government posts that really need to be filled for the president to carry out the policies that he wants to carry out?
No, sir. That's a job that never is finished. The president appointed a Harvard Business School professor named Dan Fenn, F-E-N-N, to carry on that work on a semi-permanent basis, and Mr. Fenn has been working at it for some months already, continuing to develop the names of persons who would be qualified and able to serve the administration.
And you're still searching within your Peace Corps also, I guess.
That's correct. We will be announcing in a day or two seven additional persons who have signed up to do these Peace Corps representative jobs for us overseas. There are lawyers, doctors, businessmen, and so on. Outstanding Americans.
You said men left $40,000 a year jobs in some cases to come to work with you. How much do they get paid with you?
Well, it depends. The man who is giving up that kind of a salary happens to be coming here for $14,500.
Do you think scholars, you brought in a lot of them very briefly, do you think scholars are having a problem making compromises with practicality in the government?
Not in the Peace Corps. I don't know about the government as a whole. The government is a huge enterprise, and I don't know enough about it to answer that question about the whole government.
Sergeant Shriver, we thank you very much for being with us on Capitol Cloakroom.
You have been listening to the 677th meeting in Capitol Cloakroom. This week's guest was R. Sergeant Shriver, Director of the Peace Corps. He was interviewed by CBS News correspondents Neil Strauser, Nancy Hunchman, and Robert Pierpoint.